bombshell out of the blue. And yet, this was the most closely pre-advertised plan in history, as Eusebius of the Serpent put it. So what was Lamson trying to do? Well, of course, he believed in the application of an element of market forces to the National Health Service. Indeed, you could argue that what he was doing was what the Blairites were doing, only a bit more so. There's huge continuity between what they were up to and what Andrew wanted to do. And if you want to trace the origins of that white paper, it's all there in the 2005 speech that Lamson made to the NHS Confederation. It's quite hard to find now. It's there in the sort of dustier bits of the internet's archive. But in it, he sets out how there needs to be, GPs need to do the commissioning, needs to be a pro-competition regulator, any willing supplier should be able to supply to the NHS. It's kind of all there, virtually, apart from the commission report. And this is a speech he made to the NHS Confederation in 2005. The problem, of course, is that no one was listening back then. Immediately after the 2005 general election, Blair had just won his third term, Howard was still party leader, and Lansing was a long way from power, so no one paid much attention. But this all re-emerged in 2007 in a paper called The Autonomy and Accountability, the white paper that Lansley, with Cameron by his side, launched, so don't pretend Cameron didn't know what was going on. It was all launched back then. And the reason it sort of fell apart, I think, is kind of threefold. One is, you know, the general public, and even most journalists, aren't terribly interested in the internal wiring of the NHS, it's all plumbing, kind of bores people stupid. Second, there was a small matter between 2007 and 2010 of the global crisis. You know, when people were worried whether the money was going to come out, first of all, whether the money would come out the ATMs, and then whether they had a job. You know, internal workers in NHS are hardly in some front page of newspapers. And third, of course, the Tories, when they polled this stuff, discovered it went down rather badly. They went quiet about it in the election. And I do remember in the 2010 campaign trying to get Andrew Lansing to do an interview about all this, and he politely but persistently refused it. The message he once said, I was told very clearly, he said, and I was told, brackets, by George Osborne very clearly, that the message would be revolution on education, but reassurance on health, and the message on health was we would guarantee real term funding increases to the NHS, and not talk about the money. So what he was trying to do in the sense of take what the Blairites had been up to, but entrench it. His view was if you go back to the origins of all this, which is Ken Clark's report in 1990, which introduced NHS Trust, precursor of Foundation Trust, introduced GP fund holding, introduced the purchase of the buy and split, was that the road from there to now had been one of two steps forward, one step back, sometimes a step right off the road, as these reforms sort of slightly came and went. So, you know, when Labour arrived, they first of all abolished fund holding, and then kind of produced PCGs as a alternative to that. NHS Trust gradually lost their power, but Milburn arrived, he sort of reinstated the Tories' internal market, only in a much more sophisticated form, underpinned by more legislation. So, Foundation Trust separated, genuine independence that NHS Trust ever had. And then GP commissioning goes through a bizarre number of incarnations, then ends up with practice-based commissioning, a little bit like fund holding without the cash. And then we get Andy Burnham coming along and saying, no, actually, I want the NHS to be its own preferred provider. I want just this choice and contestability stuff. You know, the NHS Trust should be given the first and second chance to fail with all the risks that be intended. And so you watch this program, this drift towards the more market-like NHS going one step forward, two steps back in a bit. And Andrew just wanted to entrench all this. He believed it. So his view was that all the reforms had been half-baked. And they've been half-baked because the policy of the way the NHS is managed is largely decided by the decision of the Secretary of State of the day, as that history sort of demonstrates. They can change it. And he wanted to nail all this down in legislation to make it, in his words, permanent, so that it couldn't be changed either by the next Secretary of State who came along, let alone by a change of government, without more legislation. And that is the core, in a sense, of what he's trying to do. And it also explains why the bill was so absolutely massive, because it had to redefine the relationship of the Secretary of State to every other bit of the NHS to try and make a split between the department and a commissioning organisation permanent. But once that was done, of course, his view was that the various levers that had been put in place, the foundation trusts, the commissioning groups, separation of politicians from the day-to-day running of some form of health authority, SHA, health authority, or PCT, the various functions they went through. And of course, his answer initially was entirely GPs. What we've ended up with is a kind of hybrid, sort of cross between GP commissioning and old PCT. But at least he's sort of nailed it down to all the legislation. Now, the second is that if you're going to have a purchaser provider split, then it probably is true that you need a separation between the Department of Health and the commissioning organisation. And in a sense, that's been there over the years, and the various incarnations of the interest executive, which have come and gone and changed. It's always been a sort of slight attempt to distance the management of the health service from the department in 1990. And he's answered that. He's created a commission for the branches in the statutory body. So in a sense, he's answered two questions that were lying around for 20 years. And I just want to say that this is called never again, because a whole bunch of people say never again should then just be subjected to this truth in the last 2 years. Andrew's view, of course, is never again, because never again we need to be changed to create the perfect world. And I will just remind you, for what it's worth, the Ken Clark study in 1991 went through the teeth of opposition. An absolute refusal to compromise, with an even greater refusal to compromise than anti-Nazism. And you are welcome to a view whether it's been successful or not, but it's stuck around for 20 years. There's an outside chance, if some of this works tolerably well, Andrew Lansdell may yet be seen as a somewhat surprising and possibly reluctant hero of NHS reform. Wouldn't bet on it. There's a possibility. This session, of course, is also about power. Where does power now lie? And the answer is, God only knows. I mean, does it lie with the board? England. I mean, commissions are third for stuff, all the specialist stuff. If you're a big teaching hospital foundation trust, you will be commissioning at least half of your services. That's kind of a controlling interest. It's a normal commercial arrangement. It will authorise CCGs. Does the power lie with the board? Does it lie with CCGs themselves? Or are they so many checks and balances on them through health and wellbeing laws and senates and departments of the commissioning board that it doesn't really lie there? Does it lie with the authorities? Actually, we now have a considerable say, if not quite a veto, on what goes on. Or does it lie somewhere where it's entirely missing? If you take the accepted wisdom that there's a large amount of hospital reconfiguration being done, quite a lot of that needs to be done at the level it used to be done by strategic health authorities, but they've disappeared. So there's kind of a power vacuum. We all know that in a vacuum, something moves into it. So what will move into it? The arms of the commissioning board? Or will these academic health science networks actually turn out to be a form of strategic health authority, hopefully reconfiguration? We just don't know. It's all over the place. Does it still lie with the Department of Health? Well, in a sense, if it does, then one of the key aims of what